afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody. And CPI Day.
Happy what day?
CPI Day.
Oh.
It's more on that in a moment. More importantly, though, it's also the 15th annual National Giving Hearts Day. Yes, the second Thursday in February, celebrated for one of the best opportunities to give to your favorite charity or to one you've never given to before.
Aww.
It's 2008. Tens of thousands of donors have given over $90 million to their preferred nonprofit organization on this day. Over $19 million last year alone. So, there you have it. Give to your local food bank like I did this morning, or do whatever moves you.
All right. Good job. All righty. Well, what moved today in the markets? I think it was kind of a red day for everything, even gold after being up for most of the day. We had a high of 1,843, but we're holding at 1,829.60. So I'm going to round it down to $1,830. Silver's down 7 pennies at $23.31. Platinum was down $6. 1037. Palladium was down 25, 2343. The USDX today, it didn't really move much, 95.55, just down 0.01. Crude oil was up 21 cents at 89.87. Paper markets today, well, after the red hot inflation report, you had the Dow drop 526 points. You had the S&P drop 83, and the NASDAQ drop 300, a little over 2% for the NASDAQ. Let's take a peek at the European markets. Most of it was positive. Asia was positive. 10-year yield finally went over 2%, Dave. 2.045. So, kind of be interesting to see what tomorrow does.
Yes.
Because I think things will.
And March and April.
Pardon?
And March and April, as far as inflation goes.
Right. But so we'll see what the markets do tomorrow. And, with the CPI today, we can go ahead and get started on that right away. If I can find my data here, here it is. Like Janet Yellen, I got to find my data. So consumer prices surged more than expected over the past 12 months, worsening the outlook for inflation. That means there's a likelihood of more interest rate hikes this year. Consumer price index for January rose 7.5% compared with a year ago. That compared with estimates of 7.2% for the closely watched inflation gauge and was the highest reading since February of 1982. Stripping out volatile gas and grocery costs, the so-called core CPI increased 6%. Yeah, you want to strip out those energy costs and food. Take that out. It's only 6%. And, of course, it's rising at its highest level since also August of 1982. So with the CPI rates hotter than expected, with both the headline and the core CPI, you saw the markets decline this morning after following the report. Government bond yields rose sharply. I said earlier that the 10-year Treasury note broke through 2%, and that's the highest since August of 2019. And so markets also got a little more aggressive in pricing rate hikes ahead. And so definitely, most likely, a half a percentage point Fed rate increase come March, Dave.
We will see, won't we? What's interesting, you know, just a few weeks ago, they were talking about just 3 or 4 increases, and now today they're talking about even a 6th hike this year. Chances of that increase to 63% based on the CME Group's futures trading. And that jumped up 10 percentage points from right before the CPI release. So 6 would take the Fed funds rate to an upper range level of a minimum of 1.75% from its current quarter of a percent. Now, the inflation numbers come at a crossroads for the economy, with 2021's rapid growth pace expected to slow significantly this year. Growth is still expected to be above trend, according to the experts, though I don't know. Sharper rate increases from the Fed could prove troublesome to reaching that goal. Now, on a percentage basis, fuel oil rose the most in January, surging 9.5% just in the month, 46.5% year over year, 46%+. Energy costs overall were up 27% on the year. And vehicle costs were flat for new models and up 1.5% for used cars and trucks in the month. They posted annual increases of 12 and 40% respectively over the last year. And of course, shelter costs were up almost 4.5% in the past year, while food costs, they say, jumped 7%. That certainly a big range in food prices for anyone who's been to the grocery store lately. A lot of things up much greater than 7%. Anyway, I guess if there's good news about this higher inflation, it's coming alongside a pretty robust jobs and wage rebound. But inflation-adjusted hourly earnings rose just 0.1% for the month. And you figure the 7% monthly gain in wages almost completely wiped out by the 0.6% inflation gain. However, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Prices do seem to be moderating, if not gradually falling even, they'll have us believe. The monthly rise in CPI in October was 0.9%, November 0.7%, December and January 0.6%. Of a percent. Perhaps not so significant when you're paying nearly $4 a gallon at the gas pump or over $5 for a gallon of milk. But I guess it is something to keep our eyes on in the coming months.
Oh, I think a $5 a gallon for milk is it's outrageous.
Mm.
You
know, nuts.
It's crazy. But the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits, here comes the jobless claims report, folks. A separate report out this morning showed that weekly jobless claims totaled 223,000 for the week ending February 5th. It's a decline of 16,000 from the previous week. Continuing claims, it runs a week behind, held at 1.62 million. The total of those receiving benefits under all programs rose slightly to about 2.1 million. And this is all according to the Labor Department through January 22nd. So the 4-week average for claims, which compensate for weekly volatility, declined by 2,000 after it was rising for 5 straight weeks. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, the Labor Department reported a surprising, if dubious, burst of hiring in January last week, with employers supposedly adding 467,000 jobs, while estimates were for a reduction of over 300,000. So difference of, what's that, almost 800,000. Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics had a lot to say about that discrepancy. None of it good. So, massive government spending, vaccine rollout, jump-started the economy last year as employers added a record 6.5 million jobs. But there are a heck of a lot of mixed signals out there, ladies and gentlemen. When you see reports of unemployment being 4%, I mean, again, we called it a joke the other day. It's a bad joke at that. It's well over 7% minimum and probably still close to double figures when you add in the discouraged workers. So that's what I have to say about that.
Well, you know, we're going to start seeing mortgage rates rise. The average long-term jumped. The rates jumped last week, and it's actually to the highest level in more than 2 years. And you would think that would bump some homeowners out of the market with these, you know, folks getting squeezed by higher costs for just about everything. The average rate on the 30-year loan jumped nearly a quarter point to 3.69% last week. After rising nearly a half a point early in the year, the average long-term rate had been flat for a couple of weeks. A year ago, the long-term rate was 2.73%. I mean, it's still historically low, but the average rate for the 30-year mortgage hasn't been this high since the first week of January of 2020, when it was 3.72%. So, I don't know, the 15-year and the fixed-rate mortgages was 2.93%, and that stood at 2.77% a year ago, Dave.
Well, I think back just, 5 years ago, when you're looking to refinance from maybe closer to 5%, and your lender said, well, I got a 3.69 for you. Got it. Sold. jump on that. Things are a little different when your starting point is a percentage point plus lower than that. But it looks like it's going to be a challenging year for both refinancings as well as mortgages for new homes. Higher costs for just about everything is hammering consumers, wiping out pay raises, as we just mentioned, and they're just going to go higher in the near term. Home prices have risen up even more. Depending on where you're looking to live, the price for a new home has risen by about 14%, as much as 30% in some cities. And housing has been in short supply. Even before the pandemic, and higher prices and now rising interest rates are going to make it even harder for those seeking a move to buy a new home, particularly your first-time home buyers, Melody.
Mm. Well, you know, I think pretty much I've been following this, on the news and so forth with the truckers up in Canada, and, I support them 100%. And but now, Dave, it's interesting to see like Paris and Belgium. So, I mean, they're expecting this to gain some momentum. And they're concerned that it could carry over there to where they're already doing they're banning road blockades to head off the disruptions over there, right?
Yeah, they are. Saw a picture early this afternoon in Canada, a couple miles from one of the bridges, main bridges. I don't know if it's one Ottawa to Detroit, but there were two police SUVs parked perpendicular to the roadway. There was a massively long line of trucks of all sizes, mainly 18-wheelers. It looked like there may have been a pickup truck or two there. But you talk about an OK Corral standoff. I didn't see if that. I assume that may have ended peacefully, but it looked like the police were well outnumbered. If any of the truckers tried to say drive around their mini blockade.
Hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, they certainly have the ability to, I can't remember which Democratic, was it, I think it was Andrew Wang, where I heard an interview, and he was basically talking about jobs. He was relating it to jobs, and he says, just wait. And he was talking about technology replacing people with robots and everything. And this is where we are today also. And he says, just wait till the truckers drive to D.C. And this is, you know, pretty much the same thing. They'll make it the point. And you don't mess with the truckers. You don't mess with the truckers. And
Well, they've already caused some disruption, the car production, Ford and Toyota especially, a couple of others, Daimler, Fiat, having to shut down production temporarily because they couldn't get parts delivered to them. They come mostly by truck, and even the freight trains, they have to have trucks to deliver the stuff to the railroads. So it's
all they have to do is address their problem.
It'll be interesting.
It's not that complicated to fix the situation. So
if it only were that easy, right? Well, sure, the other thing is
it is, though, Dave.
Well, in an ideal world, it is. Unfortunately, they're all the country's divided. And it turns what should be on the surface anyway, a simpler decision into something that's way out of whack. And now that with the threat of a convoy, I don't know if it'll be U.S. truckers or Canadian truckers heading across the border to the U.S. and heading west to disrupt the participants, spectators at the Super Bowl. No, that could get real ugly.
All they have to do is not force them with the vaccine, that's all. Hey, we're heading into break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. freedomradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coins. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, you know, it's kind of... It just does kind of crack me up, you know, where there's a bill proposed to ban stock trading. It would ban lawmakers from owning and trading individual stocks. And you had Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey. He reported more stock purchases and sales during the past 2 years than any other member of the House. 891 total trades. Amazing.
It's pretty active.
But I mean, you know, it's nothing's going to get done with this. There's some other potential bans being proposed. Hey, I'd rather see them cut their term limits in half. I'd rather see them do other things. And, you know, that way they wouldn't have time to do a whole bunch of trading and so forth. They want to ban the spouses and other immediate relatives. Pelosi's husband, he made millions from stock trades. You know, it's disgusting. Yeah. It really is, all of them. I don't care who it is. It's all disgusting.
Yeah, when it comes to policymaking, there's some real potential conflicts of interest, if certainly appearances. But I think in this case, real. I'm going to talk about... some updated news about the Fed in this respect. A report out the other day showing that Fed Chair Jerome Powell may have, or not may have, did engage in some trading at the end of some Federal Open Market Committee meetings in 2015 and 2019. Again, I'll talk more about that next segment, but things are getting serious. So maybe Congress knew about this, and, you know, with the Boston and Dallas Fed presidents resigning over the trading scandal there, maybe they're planning on actually doing something. I mean, the Fed has already imposed new limits. I don't know if Congress, presumably with the power of the purse, has the ability to impose their own restrictions, but maybe they're figuring, well, perhaps we ought to clean up our own house. But like term limits and gerrymandering, I doubt there's going to be any real substantive changes like you, Melody.
Campaign finance needs to be redone. But anyway, the global supply chains, we're going to see some relief, perhaps. Port of Los Angeles Executive Director Gene Sirota said retailers plan to replenish their inventories next quarter, just ahead of the next peak season. That's set to begin in June or July. So there's some optimistic upcoming labor talks. Hopefully won't cause any major disruptions. There's predictions. Oh. Pardon?
I beg your pardon. No, the longshoremen negotiations.
Is that what that is?
I believe so.
And the, you know, ocean shipping should start returning to normal, perhaps in the second half of the year. Port of Long Beach Executive Director Mario Cordero, he was one that was a little more cautious. He said, we'll be hard-pressed to see more than small gains until perhaps in the fall, and that's if there are no other major disruptions. And he called for the bigger push to 24/7 operations, just trying to boost the facilities. The number of container ships in the queue for the L.A. Long Beach totaled 78 as of late yesterday. That's the lowest level since November and down from a peak of 109 a month ago. So,
yeah, which, interesting. So, you know, I saw an article early this morning, and I couldn't find it after I saw this one. Mentioned that Maersk, the big shipping container, one of the largest, if not the largest in the world, is reporting record profits. I was just thinking, well, my God, it's no wonder, given the fact that, you know, shipping, what did it used to cost, $7,000 to $10,000 max for per shipping container. Now, you know, some are up to and over 20,000 a container. Yeah, I bet you they are at showing record profits. Flexports index, they have an index that tracks the number of days it takes to move goods from Asia to North America. They're still near record highs, but the early stage of that process is taking about 7% less time than it did in November. So there are some signs of this easing. Bottlenecks in some important ports like Charleston in South Carolina. But some are, others are saying, you know, it's going to take 8-9 months, possibly more, to iron out these disruptions. And it could be sometime well into 2023 or 2024 until we see anything resembling these pre-pandemic numbers, Melody.
Well, you know, when I was thinking, if I remember correctly, it doesn't make sense. They must be rerouting some of these cargo ships, because I thought I read where it takes 2 to 3 days to unload one. So if you have new ones that are continually coming and you're trying to unload, so I don't know. I would think it would take longer than they're being pretty optimistic.
Well, no wonder they're called more and more calls for the longshoremen working 24-hour round-the-clock shifts. Not the same people, but just have these ports open 24 hours, probably, you know, in part for that purpose you just mentioned.
Well, we'll see how it goes, but hope it goes well. I can't imagine what those waters look like and those ports and so forth. Oh, but
imagine with all that diesel fuel. So these, I don't know if they shut the boats down and anchor them while they're sitting there. I would imagine they do, don't you, to save on fuel?
Yeah, you'd think, but you can still, like, I would still think there'd be a lot of
wouldn't want to be swimming.
Contamination.
No port triathlons this year.
No, unless you're swimming. Oh, the goal today is to swim in and around all of those ships, cargo ships. That's your course. That's your
oof. Record low participation.
Yeah. We have your zone banks. They're told to increase cyber defenses. That's kind of interesting because you have these banks across the Eurozone are told to increase their cyber defenses. Should be a top priority amid this heightened geopolitical tensions. Andrea Enria, who chairs the European Central Bank's Supervisory Board, said, we are asking banks to strengthen their cyber regime measures and look at potential increase in attacks and the danger of these attacks going forward. They're putting more and more attention on the ability of banks to ensure their security. You wouldn't think that banks would have to be told to do so, but, you know.
Well, how about it? Yeah, given the recent history.
And, of course, you know, they're all preparing for the possible Russian-sponsored attacks. There is concern regarding cyber attacks more broadly put, but did not elaborate on specifics. But we know there's already been a ton of cyber attacks coming from various countries, Dave.
This is an interesting angle. Boy, I'll tell you, as poor as Russia is these days, I don't know what it's taking, where the money's coming to pay these cyber bullies. Because whether it's Putin directly or his oligarchs, whoever's paying them. Of course, you know, they have their money hidden all over Europe and the U.S. and to the extent they still have access to it after previous sanctions. But interesting, I don't know if it was ENRIA or the banks, some of the European banks said it's not a great element of concern. But I'll tell you, if sanctions are imposed, especially if there's, I don't know, any incursion by Russia, it's going to get real ugly. I mean, who knows what could prompt it? I mean, if it might not even be this year, maybe Putin decides, well, the risk is too great. I'm just here for the show, and I've gotten the West a little bit divided. Been able to make some inroads, perhaps, with the French and especially Germany with the pipeline and. But a countermeasure could be, you know, that some of the European countries, especially the U.S., working behind the scenes to get Ukraine into NATO. And that, I suspect, would bring some attempted retaliation in the cyber realm. Don't you think, Melody?
I would think so. So, but yeah, I mean, it's been a while though since there was any stories about any hacking going on and some cyber attacks of any main, of any large degree. I can't recall of any of late, Dave. So,
not that we've been made aware of, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, who knows what, what's going on behind the scenes and out of the headlines? I always worry about that. You know, these ransomware attacks and it's crazy.
Yeah, it is above my pay grade when it comes to technology and everything.
Hey,
but
yep, we know what we read.
Well, you know, about 15% of the money that Congress voted that was supposed to fight for this COVID over the last 2 years, only 15%. John Ramson writes in yesterday's Accuracy and Media blog, don't expect to hear much, if anything, about it from the major news outlets. He said they'd rather talk about the newsroom bailout that was tucked into an infrastructure bill than talk about the money we misused on the pandemic. On overall levels of spending, we missed badly. Andrew Lotz at the National Taxpayers Union said that about the spending problem. I certainly don't want to suggest that the federal government should have spent nothing. Yeah, well, maybe. That was a multi-trillion-dollar public health and economic problem that very likely over the course of several years required a multi-trillion-dollar response. $5 trillion was an overshoot, to say the least. But the total cost for fighting COVID hasn't been $5 trillion. Rather, it was more like $12 trillion, if you include the measures that was taken by the Federal Reserve just to support Wall Street. So when compared to the $662 billion in health spending approved by Congress to fight COVID, it means we spent only about 4%. Only $228 billion of that $662 billion has been dispersed 2 years into the pandemic. Well, this is from the, according to the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget's COVID Money Tracker. I can't even believe they actually have a report, COVID Money Tracker. But, yeah. I mean, it really is. And, you know, they're not talking about the millions of dollars that went to buy homes and cars and trips. And it's disgusting. I mean, what do you expect when you give out free money? I mean, they were grants. They weren't loans. They were grants, free money. You don't have to pay it back. Stupid, Dave.
Well, I don't have anything to add. That's upsetting enough.
Don't look up. SpaceX's new fleet of satellites is tumbling out of orbit after being struck by a solar storm. Do we have to be careful if we go outside, Dave? Are we going to get things on our head?
They say no. It just, you know, I think it's over anyway. But I think I'm not even sure there were any flashes that could be seen. These things are so small, relatively speaking.
But you know what's interesting? They were looking, there was up to 40 of the 49 small satellites launched last week. Yeah. Have either re-entered the atmosphere and burned up or on the verge of doing so. 40 of the 49. Wonder how many of the 40 of the 49 also gets taxpayer money. SpaceX had a geomagnetic storm last Friday made the atmosphere denser, which increased the drag on the Starlink satellites, effectively dooming them. Ground controllers tried to save the compact flat panel satellites by putting them into a type of hibernation and flying them in a way to minimize drag. But the company says that atmospheric pull was too great, that the satellites failed to awaken and climb to a higher, more stable orbit. This is amazing. This is just SpaceX still has close to 2,000 Starlink satellites orbiting Earth.
It's amazing. There aren't more action. I saw a video recently, I think on space.com, of a spacewalk. This must not have been televised. I don't remember this. It was an astronaut who was fixing something, and all of a sudden there were giant pieces of what looked to be a satellite or something fly hurling right by him.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't seen that one. It's amazing. But what I have heard is the music, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients this final segment. Feel free to call her at 1-800-375-4188 for all your precious metal needs. Now, in today's Wall Street on Parade newsletter, Pam and Russ Martins announced this rather disconcerting news. They report that an anonymous activist group called Occupy the Fed reported recently that Fed Chair Jerome Powell traded on the final day of a Federal Open Market Committee meeting in April of 2015 when he was a Fed governor, and also on the final day of an FOMC meeting in December 2019 when he was Fed chair. Powell's trading directly violated Fed rules in effect at the time, which prohibit trading during the period that begins at the start of the second Saturday before the beginning of each FOMC meeting and ends at midnight on the last day of the meeting. The FOMC meetings are typically, when the most sensitive and market-moving information occurs at the Fed, including votes on hiking or lowering interest rates, and other confidential actions, like some of the repo funding, overnight repo funding, and the unprecedented adding to its balance sheet over the past couple of years. Now, Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan and Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren and Fed Vice Chair Richard Clarida have resigned over their own trading scandals, and not one of them has been charged with anything as directly in violation of Fed policy as trading on the very day the FOMC is in session. The Martins fact-checked the Occupy the Fed report by downloading the dates of all FOMC meetings from 2015 through 2020 and comparing them to the trading transactions listed on the Fed's financial disclosure forms. They verified that Powell traded on April 29th, 2015, and again on December 11th, 2019, both of which were the final day of those FOMC meetings. The FOMC meets 8 times a year, roughly every 6 weeks or so. So Powell has had 96 opportunities to screw up and accidentally trade on an FOMC meeting date in violation of Fed policy, but it happened only on 2 days during that 6-year span of time, according to what we know so far. And in both of them, 2015 and 2019, the Martins point out that the highly unusual activities were occurring at the Fed. 2015, for example, would mark the first time that the Fed had raised interest rates since it slashed them to near zero 7 years earlier during the Great Recession. There's a great deal of media talk in April 2015 about what was going to happen in various markets when the Fed raised the Fed funds rate. The Fed would eventually raise rates, but not until December of that year. Nevertheless, 2019 marked the beginning of the unprecedented emergency repo lending program by the Fed. And while the Fed made public that the repo loans were being provided to its 24 primary dealers, only 6 of the mega banks were getting most of them. One of the six, that is, was Goldman Sachs. In December 2019, the final day of that FOMC meeting, Powell sold between 115,000 and 300,000 of 2 Goldman Sachs proprietary mutual funds. The funds are listed on Powell's disclosure form as, quote, GS, unquote, rather than spelled out like Goldman Sachs. Now, all other firms, the investment in firms were spelled out like Eaton Vance, Stone Harbor, and Causeway International, as opposed to listing them as EV, SH, and CIs. According to the Fed's own H41 report in December 2019, the same day that Powell dumped between 167 and 430,000 of predominantly stock mutual funds and ETFs, Fed had an outstanding balance of $213 billion in emergency repo loans that had been used to prop up the trading houses on Wall Streets, including Goldman Sachs. The larger question in all this is why Powell is even allowed to be holding Goldman Sachs proprietary funds, since Goldman Sachs is supervised by the Fed. Again, here you have a conflict of interest on the face of it. Certainly, the appearance of one. The Occupy the Fed report also makes the following charge against Powell. They say instead of providing specific dates for the majority of his transactions, Powell improperly groups trades of like securities behind the phrase multiple on every ethics form he has filed. Last year, the Washington Post indicated that a Fed spokesperson had told them that these multiple transactions were for automatic dividend reinvestments, essentially transactions on autopilot and not subject to individual decisions. Now, the Martins admit that very little known is about this group, Occupy the Fed, that scooped mainstream media with this story, other than it appears to be a fairly new group. Its Twitter account shows that it was opened in January 2021. Its Substack account shows it began on January 17th, presumably this year, since only two articles are listed. Under the banner, Who Are We, on the Substack account, the following descriptions provided. We are a group of like-minded regular people, workers, professionals, seniors, savers, and others who are disgusted and fed up with systematic corruption at the Federal Reserve and the total perversion of our American capitalist democracy. We've taken no money from special interests. We are doing this on personal time and expense because we've had enough, unquote. Now, Powell's term as Fed chair expired this past Saturday, and currently he's serving as the chair pro temp of the Federal Reserve Board. President Biden has nominated Powell to serve a second four-year term as chair, but that requires a vote by the Senate Banking Committee and the full Senate, and those votes have yet to happen. This latest report from Occupy the Fed simply adds to the withering criticism around Powell's leadership. Senate Elizabeth Warren, who sits on the Senate Banking Committee, called Powell a dangerous man to head up the Fed. That was just over his record of weakening Dodd-Frank legislative protections covering Wall Street's too big to fail banks. Powell has also presided now over the worst trading scandal in Fed history. And now his own trading is even raising eyebrows. Adding to all this, of course, is the general consensus that Powell has fallen way behind the curve on inflation that's ravaging Americans' ability to make ends meet. Certainly, trust in the Fed has seriously been weakened under Powell, and that's the reason, certainly reason enough, for the president to reconsider this nomination or for the Senate to reject it. Now, interestingly, in a related story, three of Biden's nominees to the Fed have committed to lawmakers that have confirmed to their posts they would not work in financial services for 4 years after leaving the Fed. Just come amid growing concern about the revolving door that exists between Washington and Wall Street. It's pervasive. Three potential Fed governors in question, Lisa Cook and Philip Jefferson, and longtime government official and lawyer Sarah Bloom Raskin, said they would commit not to seek employment or compensation from any financial services company after leaving the board. Or compensation, I think, was in response to Janet Yellen's practice of getting paid buku bucks in speeches for various Wall Street banks after she left the Fed. Now, their promises, these three nominees, came at the urging of Senator Warren. Fed officials and their staff regularly go to work for Wall Street banks after leaving the Fed. So giving credit where credit's due, this commitment's notable. We will see how, assuming that some or all of them are confirmed, welcome news. Let's see. You know, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal wrote this morning that regardless of today's CPI number, the Fed was almost certainly going to start hiking rates in March. But how do rates and rate hikes really work? Well, earlier this month, there seemed to be a mask-off moment at Bank of England where its top governor, Andrew Bailey, said that workers ought to show restraint in asking for higher wages. The comment was pretty surprising, and it drew widespread criticism because of how bad it sounded to say that the answer to higher wages was just for workers to ask for less. However, on some level, Bailey was expressing standard central bank logic that fighting inflation runs through the labor market. In response to Bailey, the Financial Times' Martin Sandbu asked an interesting question. He asked Bailey, why does the governor of the Bank of England encourage restraint in wage demands, but not call for restraint in businesses' attempts to protect their profit margins? Now, I agree with Wiesenthal that it's a sensible question. I mean, corporate profits are objectively massive right now. Stock buybacks are soaring once again. As long as you're resorting to public persuasion as a means of fighting inflation, why not just ask businesses to hold off on price hikes? Wiesenthal's colleague Tracy Alloway points out that one theme of this earnings season is that companies that can raise prices do and are getting rewarded by investors with higher share prices. Companies that are only raising prices slowly or aren't at all to rebuild profit margins are getting punished. Their share price is going down. It's not surprising or necessarily controversial, but shareholders like profit. And if you can raise your prices without losing market share or shedding customers, well, then that means more profits. And more profits almost always, not always, but almost always, frequently, let's say, result in higher share prices. Still, if we're going to talk about the wage price spiral as a real risk, it seems reasonable that we talk about the profits price spiral as well, right? Inflation picks up. Shareholders demand the margin gets rebuilt, prices pick up, and so on and so on. Or forego the profits in the next quarter or two. Hold off on those stock buybacks for another 6 to 9 months and reward the workers you're going to need to make those profits grow in the long run. Well, however you stand on this, ladies and gentlemen, I'd love to hear from you about it. Give me your opinion at daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. That's daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. We'll talk about them on a future program. In the meantime, enjoy the roller coaster ride and make sure you protect yourself from all the coming volatility by having a good chunk of your savings in the best insurance plan of all, gold and silver. Call Melody at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'm going to cut it short a couple of seconds. I'll be back next Tuesday. Butch will be here tomorrow. Melody may be checking in. She's back from a side mission. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks always to our engineer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.